Okay, well, it's 5:30, so I'm going to start. Okay, so I've just put down 10 points of things we're looking for, or I'm looking for, I can't speak for anybody else, in terms of men who've asked for ordination. And when I was writing this, I realised I could have had 100 points, but here's 10 points, and I hope they make sense and hang together. So the first one is, I'm looking for a good understanding of our system of meditation. And what I mean by that is not just a theoretical understanding, but an experiential understanding as well. And I want Mitras to have a sense of how the practices work together and how they perfume each other, how they interact with each other. And I also want them to have confidence in our system of meditation. I think that's very important. I think it's very important because we are a new tradition. We're not an umbrella group. We're not just a hodgepodge of practices. We're a definite tradition. And there's certainly room for change and experimentation within that tradition, but it needs to come in accord with what's already come beforehand. It needs to be integrated into our system of practice. And because of that, when men are training for ordination, I'd like them just to be doing our system of practice. There may be exceptions, but people shouldn't assume that they're the exception. There may be exceptions, but they need talking about and discussing with the ordination team and with preceptors and so on. Because I think if they mix it up with something, one, it's very difficult to see whether they have confidence in our system of practice, and two, it's unlikely that they're going to get a clear sense of how our system works together. And we've had extreme examples of that, such as a man at Gukyaloka who somehow got onto the Gukyaloka course, but he was only interested in consciousness. And he didn't do any of the other practices except just sitting and awareness of consciousness. And when it came to introducing the sixth form practice, he only did the consciousness stage. So there was no common basis of understanding. And you've got to have that common basis of understanding. We're the sort of movement that we are because of the practices that we do. And you can't separate the two. Recently, at Adhisthana, at Bhante's funeral, the atmosphere that was created was because of the sort of practices that Bhante has taught us and the practices that he emphasises. As well as a good understanding of our system of practice, this is still the first point, I'd like people to have a good understanding, Mitras to have a good understanding of the conditions that support that practice. So I'm thinking here of a regular lifestyle, ethics, simplifying their life, reducing input, and prioritizing. So sometimes people say they don't have time for regular meditation, but very often I've found that it's a case of actually prioritizing regular meditation. So a commitment to regular meditation as well there. Okay, secondly, I'd like Mitras approaching ordination to be able to work with their mental states intelligently and appropriately. And this is really, this is coming back to something really basic to start with. They can't be taking drugs, and they can't be drinking alcohol regularly. That's going to cloud their mental states, and they're not going to be able to work appropriately with their mental states if the two are going on together. I'd like them to understand that meditation means abandoning the hindrances, making a clear choice to abandon the hindrances.
This is still number two.
This is working effectively in meditation. Sometimes people say that they don't want to censor themselves, they want to be authentic, so they don't want to do anything to interfere with their experience. Buddhism is very, very clear, it has the four right efforts. And that means cultivating and developing and cultivating skillful mental states and eradicating and preventing unskillful mental states. You can't have dhyana and higher states of consciousness and be in the hindrances. They're mutually exclusive. So the first thing needs to be clarity about what the hindrances are, being able to recognize the hindrances and to work on them. I sometimes think we need a basic meditation course. I sometimes think we should be running a basic meditation course here, you know, just on the foundations of meditation. I think also abandoning the hindrances means that you have confidence in your own possibility of developing higher states of consciousness. So confidence that you can develop higher states of consciousness and that they're going to be more fulfilling and satisfying than the hindrances. There's lots I could say under working in meditation. I'll just mention a couple of things. One is having a perspective. So not over-identifying with any particular state of mind that you're in, but seeing yourself as a changing being. And so you can have a certain distance from your actual experience and realize that you can work with it and change it into something more positive and progressive. And with that comes keeping perspective. So not falling into despondency when meditation becomes difficult, and not getting elated when it's going well. But having a clear sense that if you approach meditation intelligently and appropriately, it will change your mind, it will transform you. A lot for discussion there. One thing that I think would help this greatly is for preceptors and Kalyana Mitras to make discussing meditation, and I don't mean just insight, but actually working on discussing how people work in meditation, helping them to objectify that with the mitra or the preceptee. Okay. Is the speed I'm talking okay? It's not too fast.
A little bit fast,
okay. Okay. Thirdly, a sense of ongoing integration. So I'm talking really about the mindfulness of breathing here, but I'm also talking about the stage of integration too. My own experience is I'm much more drawn to the metta bhavana, but at a certain point I realised that I needed something to balance it. I was becoming very emotional, and most of the time it was positive, but I also needed a calm and a spacious mind, and a non-reactivity, and for that I needed to look to the mindfulness of breathing. So I think the two work very, very well together. And while on the metta mindfulness of breathing, the only point I'll make is for people not to drop the counting prematurely. You may not need the counting sometimes, but sometimes you definitely do need the counting because it breaks up wandering thoughts. And again, it's this whole counter to everything formless and not interfering with your meditation practice. You do need to actually be active in your meditation practice as well as receptive. So this is also the stage of mindfulness generally, and I want to make a few points about mindfulness. It's more than moment to moment awareness. There's the ethical dimension, developing a sense of agency and conscience. The ethical dimension, developing a sense of agency and conscience. And there's also continuity of purpose. This is connected with individuality, that there's a continuity of purpose running through your activities more and more. It's only the integrated person that can commit himself or herself. So this is very relevant in terms of ordination. So we're looking for a sense of continuity of purpose, and the mindfulness of breathing can help with this practice. And I'd also like us to think in terms of the four dimensions of awareness. World, self, including body and its movements, such things as forgetting where you left your umbrella, taking somebody else's shoes from the shrine room. As happened to me last night, and other people, very, very important, other people, and reality. Okay, number four, regular metta bhavana. So, first thing, very, very important, that people understand that metta bhavana is not just about feeling good. It's actually to do with developing more interest in other people and becoming less self-centered. And there's a strong volitional aspect to the metta bhavana. I think it's better to think of the metta bhavana, rather than whether an individual practice has gone well, to think of yourself as to think of the metta as a weighty, skillful karma. So it's definitely a habit of becoming more helpful and more friendly that you're strengthening every time you sit down to do the metta bhavana. And it doesn't really matter what's happening in the practice. It's the volitional aspect that's important. And the results are likely to come outside of the practice. So if you're developing metta, or I think what you're looking for, probably for Mitras as well, is greater friendliness, greater helpfulness, and interest in other people. Less self-centeredness, in a sense. And a sense of joy as well. Metta is also connected with sukha. Recently, when I was in Sweden, I came across a lot of people not wanting to do the metta bhavana in stages, wanting to just do metta bhavana in a completely formless sort of way. It's very important that we do the stages. It's very important we encourage people to do the stages. It brings you into contact with your whole range of experience of other people. You shouldn't be too rigid with this. For instance, you might need to spend a lot of time on the first stage sometimes, just connecting with what's actually going on before proceeding. But at other times, you might be able to go through the first four stages very quickly because there's already quite a strong basis of metta there and spend a lot longer on the last stage. But it's important that we don't kid ourselves. You need to be very honest with what we feel or what we don't feel in the metta bhavana. And there is a formless aspect to metta bhavana, but the formless aspect comes on the back of doing a lot of work to develop metta. And it may be that you get to a point where the metta is just flowing, and whoever you bring to mind, you just feel metta towards them. Okay, just sitting. First of all, it's not a complete practice.
Is that an extra point? Sorry.
This is an extra point, yeah, this is number five. So it's not a complete practice. Spiritual life does actually require striving. I think the Buddha made that very clear. But if you just have striving, it's going to create a certain strain. So you need periods of letting go as well. I was talking to Banti about this, and I put it to him that meditation practice required both effort and receptivity. And he said he'd put it differently. The way he preferred to put it was effort or practice and letting go and experiencing the fruits of the practice. So effort and letting go and experiencing fruits of the practice. If you're just making effort all the time, you don't get to experience the fruits. So that's why we do a practice like the metta bhavana or the mindfulness of breathing, and that's followed by a period of just sitting. Or you do your morning meditation and then you just sit down and look out the window for 20 minutes at the end, whatever. And this making an effort, letting go and experiencing the fruits of the practice, that should be present also in every meditation practice that you do. So even if you're doing the metta bhavana or you're doing your sadhana, you're making some effort, but you're also allowing spaces within the practice where you let go and you just experience the fruits of the effort that you're making. You come back and you experience the fruits. And I think if you're meditating regularly, you find yourself doing this quite naturally. One other thing I'd like to say about the just sitting practice is keep the space open. For some reason, we managed to have filled up the just sitting practice with all sorts of led through, guided meditations, all sorts of reflections. The idea is you just let go and you keep the space completely open. The whole point is that it confounds your will, and you don't want to be introducing your will into the practice again. The just sitting practice should be completely useless, completely non-utilitarian. It confounds your will. Okay, so spiritual death. An element of spiritual death is what we're looking for.
This is point six.
This is point six, yeah. So that dimension should be present. I read something quite interesting. I was reading through a transcript of Banti's lecture on a system of meditation. And at the end of the lecture, he asked three questions. And one of the questions is, at what point in the system of meditation does ordination come in? And what he says is it comes after integration and positive emotion, and between that and spiritual death, and just at the beginning of spiritual death. So ordination comes in when there's enough integration and enough positive emotion to commit yourself and to keep going. And as you're just starting to get a glimpse of letting go of a limited self in order to open up to a larger self or a larger experience of yourself. So I think we should be introducing some element of spiritual death from quite early on. And I think we already do this. I know at Padmaloka, we do it through the Anapanasati retreats, through the Brahmaviharas retreats. We have the five reflections for everyone. And we have the reflections on the three Lakshanas. And then at Gukyaloka, we start practicing the six-element practice intensively. And the six-element practice is a particularly good insight practice because it combines all sorts of different practices. You can bring any insight reflection to the six-element practice. I could say more about that another time. I think we also need to have an understanding of Pratichasamutpada as the central Buddhist principle, central Buddhist metaphysical principle. And not just Pratichasamutpada in the sense of the conditionality of the round. I'd also want people to have a real sense of augmentative conditionality, by which I mean the spiral type of conditionality, and how positive states unfold into still more positive states, and so on and so forth. And we've been doing retreats here on called This Being That Becomes, where we've been mostly meditating on the path in the form of spiral conditionality. And I think it's very important to reflect on spiral conditionality because it gives a sense of confidence in the path as well. Some people are going to have insight experiences. You know, they should be having insight experiences. If that element isn't present, if the insight element isn't present, it's not really Buddhism. So some people are going to have insight experiences. We have a path of irregular steps as well as a path of regular steps. But it's important how we relate to those insight experiences. Some time ago, someone I ordained was talking to Banti about this, and he was talking about his insight experiences and the intensity of it, and he was finding the intensity of it quite difficult. And the analogy that Banti gave was, he said it's like two rams locking horns, and they're really going at each other, but they can't keep it up. They have to draw back and refresh themselves and then come back to it again. And I think it's a bit like that with insight. Edward Conser, I think, said that insight's like salt. You just need a little bit of it and it goes a long way. And you can't keep just bashing away at insight. The way that transformation happens is vision and then transformation. So you may have some insight, but then you use that to transform the rest of your being and bring it up to that level. So if people have some insight and they want to deepen it, it probably isn't going to be just a question of keeping doing lots and lots of insight practice is going to be more a question of bringing that vision into the rest of their lives and using it to bring the rest of their lives up to the level of that peak experience. So if people come to you, if one of your mitras had some insight experiences, it would be good to see how they're applying that to the rest of their lives. And it doesn't mean that their training for ordination is going to be any different. I remember hearing of a particular woman going to see Bhante and saying that she'd had these very powerful insight experiences, and he'd keep saying, "And how's your mitra study going? and how are your friendships?" and so on. It doesn't make any difference. It's still the same path. It's still the training for ordination. It doesn't make them a special case. You have to take into account what's happened to them. You have to be receptive to that, but it doesn't make them a special case. It needs to start to transform the rest of their lives. It needs to be integrated into the rest of their experience. And I don't think we do anybody any favours by making them a special case, because I think if you start to fixate on and identify with particular experiences in meditation, that is bound to hold you back from further development. That's in the past, that's gone. Okay, number 7, this is quite a brief point, and I've already alluded to it. Move towards seeing meditation as skillful, weighty karma. And rather than identifying with particular meditation experiences and fixing on them, see it as channels in which positive emotion can flow down that you're developing through your whole meditation practice. You're developing skillful habits. And that requires consistent meditation practice. Not putting the pot on the boil and then taking it off all the time. Not swinging between elation and despondency, but a steady, persistent effort that's based on Shraddha. Sorry, who's that?
Shilukirti.
Yeah. Which part, sorry?
The first part of that.
To see meditation as a skillful, weighty karma, rather than identifying with particular experiences. Good. Number 8. I'd like mitras to go on a solitary retreat. Because I think it's on solitary retreat that they get a sense of being thrown back on their own resources outside the positive conditions that they already have. And solitary retreats are where you discover your own resources, or one of the places where you discover your own resources. And solitary retreats can give people great confidence in their practice and a great sense of inner riches. Okay, number 9. I'd like to see a connection with the Buddha and the myth of the Bodhisattva. So this is very much to do with not putting a limit on their own transformation.
Sorry,
not putting any limit on their own transformation, on what they can become. They're not going for refuge to the mundane, they're going for refuge to the transcendental. And a sense of openness to a transcendental person, in inverted commas. even a sense of other power. A sense of devotion. And devotion is the traditional basis for meditation. It's not self-development. In traditional society, devotion is the basis for meditation. A sense of reverence, and importantly, a sense of myth. So I think in terms of people being approaching ordination, it's important that they're not just seeing it in terms of their own efforts, but there's also a sense of partaking in a myth. And that myth is the myth of the Bodhisattva, which in a sense is also the myth of the order as Bodhisattva.
Can you say that again, please?
Not just one's own efforts, but a sense of partaking in a myth. And that myth is the myth of the Bodhisattva, which is also, I think, the myth of the order. So there needs to be this transpersonal element. And in a sense, spiritual rebirth precedes spiritual death. So unless you have a sense of something bigger that you're going to die into, it's very easy for spiritual death to become nihilistic. And at the same time, if you don't have a sense of spiritual death, then the Bodhisattva can be that you meditate on after meditation can just become a deva. Just part of the round, just a higher part of the round.
Could you repeat all that?
Okay. I'll try to. I'm improvising, but I'll try to. So what I was saying is that in a way that spiritual rebirth precedes spiritual death. So if there's no sense of something greater that you're dying into, then spiritual death practices can become nihilistic.
Yeah.
And the next bit was, does anyone remember what I said? And the other way around. So at the same time, if you don't have a sense of spiritual death, then the Bodhisattva that you meditate on can right. just become a deva, a higher dimension of the round. Okay, my last point is meditation is not a standalone practice. So this points to the importance of context. And something that I've noticed again and again is that Bhante's teachings work best if they're practiced as a whole. If you don't pick and choose which teachings you follow, but you practice them as a whole. And meditation needs to be connected with and expressed in one's life and one's whole practice. There can be a tendency to identify meditation as practice, and that is practice. Anālio makes the point that meditation is one stage of the Eightfold Path, and it's only right meditation if you're practicing the whole of the Eightfold Path. I think that's a good point. When I first moved to Padmaloka from Sweden, someone said to me, well, you're doing all these things, you're meeting people, and you're leading study groups, and you've got all these friendships. Where do you find time to practice? They meant meditation. they don't completely identify practice with meditation. Well, that's such a mistake, because it means that practice becomes something that's totally inward looking, whereas it's obviously much, much more than that. It involves every aspect of your life. And I want to finish, to make that point, I want to finish with going back to Banti and this extract from the Precious Garland seminar, where he talks about the five things that connect your meditation practice, the five stages of the path expressed in everyday life. And this connects with the five stages of meditation practice, five aspects of meditation. So I'll read these slowly and you can make a note of them. So in relation to integration, he says, keep up an effort to be mindful and aware, and together and integrated as possible. And secondly, remain in as positive a mental state as possible. Thirdly, and don't lose sight of your ultimate goal at any time. I think this is referring to spiritual death or vision, the stage of vision. And fourthly, try to apply at every level what you have seen at the highest level. Try to apply at every level what you have seen at the highest level. And lastly, do your best for other people. Do what you can to help them. So, in that way, our meditation practice feeds into our spiritual life, into the rest of our spiritual life, and the rest of our spiritual life creates the conditions for our meditation practice.
Repeat number 4.
Yeah. Don't lose sight of your ultimate goal at any time. Sorry. Number 4. Try to apply at every level what you have seen at the highest level. Good. That's all I want to say. I think what I'd like to do is just take a very few questions, just for about 10 minutes, and then break up into groups, and we can look at these more in groups. So if there are any immediate questions or any clarifications, just say so. No, I just did it this morning. It's the basic stuff that I've come across, you know, like leading retreats here and what I teach myself here. Well, I suppose when you meditate, well I suppose I go back to a phrase of Banti's, which is how does it go? Meditation is a continuous flow of skillful mental states. So presumably that's what you're trying to do in the rest of your life. You're trying to create a continuous flow of skillful mental states. When you're meditating, it's a particularly concentrated means of doing that, where you're using the mind to work directly on the mind. So what you're trying to do is to bring into being this continuous flow of skillful mental states. And I'd go even further. I'll just go further than that. It's exactly the same for vipassana practice, for insight practice. You're trying to bring into being vipassana. So you're trying to see things in accord with the Dharma. So you need to be actually trying to see things in terms of the Dharma in the whole of your life. And when you reflect on that in meditation, it's just a particularly concentrated way of doing that. And the two flow back into each other. So it's vipassana bhavana in the same way that you have samatha bhavana. So you could say that samatha bhavana relates to the karma nima, and vipassana bhava relates to the dharma nima. That'd be another way of putting it. Okay, you probably need a bit of time to let this settle. I hope that was helpful anyway.